Pasuk Zayin. Cherev Uri Al Roi. And the sword, Hashem says, my sword, may it should wake up. May my sword wake up and attack Al Roi, my counterparts, my shepherd. We discussed yesterday briefly. Rashi is a little bit different than the Mitzvahs. We're not going to repeat. I'll just do Rashi quickly. Al Esav Shifkatativ Al Tzoin Golusi. Rashi over here is learning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to his sword and is instructing his sword to attack the nation of Esav. Esav, Rashi learns, is called in this pasuk Hashem's shepherd, the entire nation, not just a specific leader, but the entire nation. They are the host of the Am Yisrael in the time of in Golus, specifically the last of the four stages of Golus, Golus Edom. And Hashem is saying the time has come for Edom to be held accountable for their crimes against the Jewish people. Shifkatev al tzoin golusi, v'algever amisi. This is a repetition. This means exactly the same thing. The gever means the man who has been appointed, who is v'kichesh ba'amisa. That's this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, we have the word amiso. It means the man that is my. We're calling the entire nation my fellow man. Shechibartiv elai. I have drawn them towards me. Lishmar tzoini, to guard my sheep kamoini, like similar to me. Hashem says, I am truly the shepherd of the Jewish people, but because they have sinned, I have exiled them. And I have given them over to a different shepherd. That's part of the punishment. As we discussed yesterday, when the Jewish people sinned at the Chet HaEgel, Hashem said, I will not take them personally into the land. I will instead send a representative, a malach. A malach will go before them to take them into Eretz Yisrael. That's part of the punishment. That I will not myself lead them, take them by the hand, but I will appoint a representative, and that is a very disappointing, that's very painful, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that you're not worthy that I should personally attend to your needs, and that is the Churban of Golus.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Rashi uses the expression my Golus.
My Golus?
My Golus, right? Isn't that what he said?
Golusi. Let me see. Where do we see that? The previous Rashi. Al tzoin golusi. Right. We're calling the Jewish people. They're like exiles.
Which means two things. One, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who brought about the golus.
Okay.
And two, as we've had any number of times,
Inochi bitzara.
I am in golus with you.
Correct. Golusi. Okay, so it's true. Hashem is calling the Jewish people Golusi. Golusi means my creation. My Golus is Hashem's creation. Okay, I hear what you're saying. Okay, let's go further. Next pasuk, the pasuk then goes on to say Hach es haroye, Rashi. Rashi says Hach es haroye. Hashem is instructing his sword to smite the shepherd. Who is the shepherd? It's Melech Romi Harasha'a. To smite the Melech. So here, it's interesting. The beginning of the pasuk, Hashem says to the sword, to attack the nation of Esav. And in this section of the pasuk where it says Hach, we're singling out the Melech, the king. Melech Romi Harasha'a. Usif Utsela Hatzoin Shekavusha Tachas Yado, and then the sheep that is conquered under his authority will be dispersed. Vahashivasiyodi the Eshnemakosishenis. Okay, we learned this well yesterday, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says I'm then going to launch a second attack. Al Hatsoyarim on the Yom. What does this mean? Al Hashotoinim Hatsirim Min HaMelachim. This is the secondary level of leadership. You understand here again? What do these words mean? The Yisbadrun Shilto Nayo. Dispersed. Okay, the word lusif, lusenda means to be dispersed. That's really the leaders, the secondary leaders. Vitir game al hatsaidin mimunim shalohem hashriyim lohem. It means the secondary layer of leadership.
The junior officers.
The junior officers. Hanikra hazer babumais. Yoinus also translates this charba iskeli al malka. The second part of the pasuk, Hashem says he's going to send a sword, will be revealed upon the king, the al shiltonayo chavre, and upon his dichvosei, the domile, and upon other leaders that are similar to the king. Kitol yos malka, the king will be killed, the yisbadrin shiltonayo and his associates, his deputies, his assistants, they will be dispersed. Ve'ein l'shoy netargum ha-zimef l'Yisrael. This is not referring to Jewish people. Shlom etzim netargum ha-mikra shol toynin b'Yisrael el ha-melech v'sarim. Sh'netargum shalachem rav rivin. Rashi here is revealing a very interesting idea that the Targum never uses the word shol toynin in reference to the Jewish people. When the Targum wants to describe the leaders of the Jewish people, the term is always Rav Rivin. Rav Rivin, which means the great. Lashon of Rav means great. The word Shul Toinin, an interesting idea, when the Targum says is exclusively used in reference to the Umos Ha'olam. The Umos Ha'olam is we use the word Shul Toinin. Klal Yisrael, we only use it, we use a different word to describe Jewish leadership. Okay, this is probably a nice homiletic drasha you can make up about this, the difference between a Jewish leader and a non-Jewish leader. A leader, all the political leaders of this world, all the heads of state, how do they view their role? What is their purpose? How do they define their mission, their role as leading their country as head of state, versus how a Jewish leader, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands from a Jewish leader and his role in guarding the Jewish people. This is a starting point.
I want to point out that the version we have, the Art Scroll version of the Targum, is cleaned up, because you have in the Judaica Press version, they mentioned the Malka de Bavel, which is clearly off base,
right,
and a censored version.
Correct,
so you see,
right.
Here it's eliminated.
Right.
Although in Rashi also it looks funny because what is this Gavul Harisha? There are variations of it.
Right. That appears to be an uncensored version. The Malchus Harisha, which refers to Rome,
they didn't tolerate it explicitly.
Rome. They say Rome. And then there are versions which change it to Bavel. Because the censors would not be offended if it said Bavel, because that's ancient history. To say Rome would offend the censors. And to say Malchus HaRasha somewhere in between, which maybe they could get away with, maybe they could not. It's true. But this is a very interesting Rashi when you talk about Jewish leadership. Okay, leadership is something which is a big topic, especially in our day and age when there's a dearth of Jewish leadership. What is the role of a leader? And here is a nice starting point. This Rashi is something to remember, in the middle of nowhere, Zechariah, who would know about this Perek Gimel, where Rashi over here makes a very interesting point that when the Targum describes the leaders of the non-Jewish world, of the 70 nations, the Targum used the word Shultainin. A Shultain. A Shultain is an authority, an officer. But when Targum describes Jewish leadership, it's an entirely different word. The word is Rav Rivin, greatness. Rav Rivin comes from the Lashon of a great person. What is greatness? Greatness usually means to give. Hokel ha-godol. What does it mean, hokel ha-godol? Godol means to give. It means to give. We have in the Shemon Esrei, hokel ha-godol, ha-gibor, v'ha-neira. There are three meters that we use to describe Hashem. Godol, gibor, and neira. And many of the commentators, they match the word Godol with Avraham, the word Gibor with Yitzchak, and Noira with Yaakov. What is Godol? Avraham's midah is the midah of Chesed. What is Chesed? Chesed is to give. Gibor means hold back. To hold back means fear of Hashem. Yitzchak's midah is Gevurah. Is Gevurah, which means, and what is the ultimate Gevurah? Ezehu Gibor HaKoivesh Es Yitzro. Yira Shanayim. What is Yaakov? Yaakov is Noira. Noira is very hard to define, but it's basically, it's a synthesis of giving and holding back. It's Yaakov is the Mitosra Shlema. He was the one that was able to synthesize the two midas of Avraham and Yitzhak together. But what do we take out of this? That the midah of Godol, of greatness, is to give. There's a very good passage I heard from a Reisman. Ubar Zilai HaGiladi Ish Godol Ma'od. And they, all the commentators explain this person, Barzillai, was a very wealthy man, and he helped David. When David was running away from Avshalom and David had problems, Barzillai HaGiladi, he helped David. He always came to David's defense and he gave. He's an Ish Godol Ma'od. And there the commentators explained to me he was a generous person. Godol, greatness, is defined in giving. So it's interesting here when it comes to the Umay Soilam. They're called shiltoinim. That's the word, shiltoin. Shiltoin is a shalit. Shalit b'chol ha'aret. What's a shalit? A ruler. What do rulers do most of the time? I don't know. They like to take. They take for themselves the best. They take for themselves the best. Corruption. They take for themselves, for the family. They make sure they're comfortable.
If I'm not mistaken, Yosef,
who has shalit b'chol aretz? Yosef was the shalit b'chol aretz. What was the goal of Egypt? Vayitzbar bor. They took. They collected grain until they accumulated so much grain in the storage houses that it was impossible to count. So the goal of Egypt, when Yosef, who Paro appointed Yosef to be a shalit. And what was the purpose of being a shalit? To accumulate, to store wealth in Egypt to save up for the 7 years of famine.
Well, that's the next few words of Hu HaMashpir, Chol HaMoretz.
Then
right
he was the provider. So he at first he took in order to give out. So very good. So here the word shalit, I'm just guessing, the word shalit in general, a shalit, I'm making a big assumption which needs to be proven, which we're just thinking out loud with you. As Rabbi Mayevsky likes to say that expression, I'm thinking out loud with you, and that is that shalit means to take. You are an authority whose role is to collect, to accumulate wealth for your nation, for your people. Ravravin comes from the word rav, means to be great. Greatness is usually defined in terms of giving, to give.
Or master. This could be
a master.
Yeah, it could be a double, in other words, even a higher than a regular master.
But you have it in, you say in the Tzor Mishalo, Rav Ravin Oyvdeh,
yes, that's
the
right.
You're praising God for his great gifts.
Oh, that's so you see, Mamash, so you see there. So this is a theory. This is a thesis which needs to be proven. Maybe Mark will write it up and we'll submit it to Oxford for PhD. That the difference between the word shalit and the word ravravin is shalit means to be a taker, and a ravravin means to be a giver, to give. Here, Rabbi Mayevsky provided already some of the sources that seem to lend itself to that this interpretation is correct. There's a connotation of taking with regard to shalit and a connotation of giving in regard to ravravin. And this is the difference between a Jewish leader and a non-Jewish leader. A leader of the head of state of Umas Olam, their goal, their mission is to accumulate, to accumulate wealth for their country, and in the process to be corrupt and take for themselves a double portion. A leader of the Jewish people, his role is not to take, is to give, and especially to give of himself. Avshaga Feivel Mendelovich, Zechat Tzag Levracha, I don't remember too much. Once upon a time, I read the biography. They wrote a biography, article with a biography of Shavuot Lubavitch. And one of the things that came out in the book is his greatest hanah was to take a good student of the yeshiva, of Torah Vadas, and throw him out. not to throw him out in a bad way, as soon as he saw that a student has developed to the degree, to the point where he now can give, he can be a mashpia, he can be a leader in some capacity, immediately without any hesitation, he sent him out. He said, I'm getting you a job. I want you to go to this community. I want you to be the rabbi there. I want you to be a rebbe in this community. I want you to do this. And to the degree where the board of trustees of the yeshiva had complaints against him, you're not leaving anyone over in this yeshiva. You know, we also need people here in the yeshiva. This is a yeshiva. We also need some people to, you know, to occupy the building. We don't want this place to be a ghost town. We need some quality people to be in the yeshiva. Why are you shipping out every last person and you influencing them to leave the yeshiva? That was his nature, is to give. If I have
that
here
sounds
something,
like Rabbi Lipschitz, Oliver Sholem in YU. They used to say about it that when he got a buffer who felt to really had a lot of potential, he would tell him, what are you doing here? YU, go someplace better.
But no, not even to go somewhere to learn more, but go somewhere to be a mashpia, to influence other people. That was something which came out in the book. I remember from years ago in that book. This is greatest time. This student already has reached that level where he can be a leader. Go, leave. I don't want you to be here anymore. I don't care if this place collapses. The goal is to give. That's a very great milo. That is a Jewish leader. Okay, we have here a nice little drasha. A chilik between a shalit and a rav. A rabbi is called a rav. Or a rav. Or the rav. I always find it very funny though. I don't know who makes the car. The Rav. The RAV4, the Rav, you know, there's a certain type of Jeep. The Jeep. I don't even know how you pronounce it. R-A-V. The RAV4. I always call, this is the Rav. The Rav Mobile. You know, Lahada is the Pope Mobile. This is the Rav Mobile. Okay. Chaim Blin, they call the Rosh, the Rosh, the Rosh Mobile. Put a little strobe light on it, you know. Let's go further. Okay, Pasuk Ches v'Hashlishis Yivaser Bo. What is the Shlishis? So we learned yesterday in the Mitzvah study that the world is divided into three parts: Edom, Yishmael, and Am Yisrael. What about the Chinese? What about India? In China and India, they're competing now. They each have a population of 1.4 billion people. Can you imagine 1.4 billion Chinese and there are 1.4 billion people who live in India.
Indians.
They call Indians?
Hindus are a religion.
Okay, so they are 1.4. So where do they fit into the picture? Where do they, with 3 billion people almost together, where do they fit into this picture of the world? The Pasuk over here says there's Edom, Yishmael, and there is Am Yisrael in India. They're not Muslims. Their version of Islam is a very watered down version, if anything. They're more Hindus. Buddhism, they're more apikarsan there. No, I don't know.
Buddhism.
What? I don't even know.
Majority Hindu, believe me, they have plenty of violence.
I don't know. But so where do they, what are the Chinese, what are they? Where do they fit into the world? Where do the Chinese fit into these three big nations that Chazal discuss all the time? Yishmael and Esav and Klal Yisrael. Where are the Chinese? That's a big number. 1.4 billion people. That's quite a big number of people. How do they fit into this picture? They don't seem to be.
They're not even counted in the 70s, so I mean.
They don't seem to have any affiliation with either or, with Western, with Christianity, and with Islam. Not that I'm aware of. What are they? What do they believe in?
Well, until recently, they weren't out for world domination. They weren't the proselytizing nation. They kept to themselves, not lately, but till now they did.
What are their religious
That's
beliefs?
Why Jesus assimilated because they didn't persecute Jews who lived there because they were busy with themselves.
Southeast Asia was Buddhist and China was Confucian.
What's Confucian? What is that?
Confucian? No, it's from Confucius.
Confucius? What is that? What is that?
It's a philosophy.
All right, I'm not familiar, but over here we learned yesterday that there were three.
So you say that when Abraham sent back to, what's the name?
Keturah.
Yeah, right.
Matanos, he gave her Matanos.
They had children over there.
Right.
And I think Rashi said they're very shiny, their faces.
Could be China, Lashon of Chain. China is China, I think. China is in Hebrew, China. Miloshin Chain.
No, it isn't.
No, I don't know.
It's
I don't know.
Sin with a
samach. Okay, I do not know, but it is something which needs to be addressed.
We have no idea.
To be addressed. The Chazal did not appear to give much recognition to these members of society of the world as having any prominence.
When would they ever have met one?
1.4 billion people is quite a number of people.
And if then, they still never met one.
Well, they never bought a product on Amazon that was made in China?
Apparently not. Or from the Amazon.
Okay, so it's interesting. Today, China is... Look, Trump says something no one ever said before. They asked him over and over, what is the most dangerous, what is the greatest threat to the United States of America? And I think many people, like myself, we're expecting him, when they asked him that question, we're expecting him to say Iran, to say the Soviet Union. I don't know. Well, you know, the standard answers. And he says China. China is the greatest threat to the United States, to this world. He said over and over, China, China, China. He put them on the map. People, years ago, you know, okay, China is China. You know, they're very powerful. They're very clever. They're very shrewd. And they control their economy is a massive economy.
They're communists.
They're communists. But today we're living in a world where they're front and center. They're front and center, and that's very challenging. Not very challenging, but it's something which is very interesting because when we learn Tanakh doesn't mention them. Tanakh talks about the Crusades. It talks about
Novadi. I think it's in Noah.
Right, but in Tanakh, there's all the nevuos are all interpreted in reference to Yishmael and Esav, which we today identify as Western civilization versus the nation of Islam. And Chazal doesn't seem to pay much attention at all to half of the world, maybe even more than half the world, of other nations which have very very different way of life, and their way of life today has become a dominant force of control, and it's not something that you can ignore in your daily life. And hafeichba de kulaba, everything is in the Torah, everything is in the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im, certainly they saw everything in the future, Yemos HaMashiach. And how are these nations, what part are they going to play in the Geula? Remains to be seen, remains to be understood. Let's go further. Now here it says over here Rashi, over here is obviously learning over here the Sukkim very different than the Mitzvah David. Whereas the Mitzvah David broke up the world into 1, 2, and 3, into three different nations, Rashi is not doing that. Rashi over here is describing purely the nations of the world. He's describing Rome, Edom. It seems like Rashi is only describing Edom. And Rashi is saying that Edom is going to go through a major churban. Western civilization is going to go through a major upheaval. First, the leaders are going to be taken out. And then the secondary layer, a secondary level of leadership is going to be taken out. The hashlishis means the third. The third, what's going to happen to them? They're going to be megayer. Now, what does that mean? Megayer is going to be a mass gerus of members of Edom into Klal Yisrael. I don't know what this means. V'yashlishis yivoseba yiskayru v'yichyu. Edom is slated for complete destruction. Two-thirds will perish. A third of Edom will survive only through gerus. What does this gerus mean? Does this mean they can become charedim? Does this mean they can become observant of the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach, is there such a thing called gerus? Do you ever, we ever use the term becoming a ger to become observant of the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach? We have non-Jews that are completely, don't know from anything, don't know from God, and they go through a ceremony where they accept upon themselves formally to observe the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach. Yeah, is there such a principle?
Those people already have a religious foundation, but they feel it's wrong. They arrive at the conclusion it's wrong, and they switch to Noahide.
Noahides. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe was very much into this. The Lubavitcher Rebbe very much was into this. In fact, I met not that long ago the shliach from, I think, San Francisco. There's a shliach. He's a very interesting fellow. I remember his name. He rides a motorcycle. He does a lot of very interesting things. He's a very charismatic person. I met him and his son. The father is not a youngster. He's been doing this for
surfing rabbi.
He's a very, very, very interesting person, and he does a lot of work in San Francisco. And I met him recently, and I was talking to him, and he was telling me all these very interesting things. And he said that the Rebbe told him, he met the Rebbe a few times before he died, this goes back obviously many, many years ago, and the Rebbe told him he should devote himself to teaching the Goyim the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach. And in fact, he told me, I mean, he developed, his dream was, he's now getting into it a little bit more, he's obviously needs a lot of money for this, he's making this ship, this massive ship, which has a theme of Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach. And the ship obviously represents the Teva, Noach's Teva, and he takes people on the ship, and they go on a cruise, and the whole ship's theme is to promote the observance of Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach. That's his big thing, and he told me he has a brach from the Rebbe, and they're into this. Okay, let's go. So maybe over here, when it says over here in the Pasuk, when it says here in Pasuk Ches, this idea that is going to be, there's going to be a, I think I knocked him out by mistake. Rav Kalman, I can't hear you. You're muted. Rav Kalman, I can't hear you. You have to unmute. You were saying something?
Okay. I see that it says, Chnan yatlad et sidon b'choro v'et chet, v'et ha'yvusiv, v'et ha'ymuriv, v'et ha'gerashi, v'et ha'chivim, v'et ha'arki, v'et ha'sini, v'et ha'avadi, and so forth, v'achar nafotsu mishpachot ha'knani. So only the seven nations stayed in Knan, and the rest of them are nafotsu.
They dispersed.
So these are the Chinese. The Chinese are from Knan. That's what it says here.
Okay. The Canaanim. You said that the Chinese are so members of the Canaanim.
So that's not the modern version then.
All right.
The modern Hebrew Sini comes from the English Sino, like Sino steak, you know?
No.
S-I-N-O is the prefix in English for China. So Sini is borrowed from that.
Sini is China. Sini, yes,
Hasini? No, that's my point.
Yeah.
The modern Hebrew word for China, sin,
okay,
comes from the English.
Okay.
S-I-N-O, which is a prefix meaning Chinese.
Okay, so it means absolutely nothing. Basically,
and
no relationship.
Torah.
Okay.
No relation?
Okay. Okay, whatever. Pasuk Tes. Pasuk Tes, Vedesias Ashlishus Ba'esh, Ra'ayel Yas, Tilisa Rabbi Rashi be'oko ha kichur de'esha. Now, what does that mean? Hashem, I'm going to bring the third into fire, into this kiln to purify them. She yispelu v'yisu miktsas hagedim b'tzaras chevle shal Mashiach v'mulchem eskei gomagoy im Yisrael. Okay, here he learns a very interesting idea that the goyim that are going to become gerim, they're going to be partners, they're going to also suffer from the Chevle Moshiach that Klal Yisrael suffers from. ומשום יבוחנו כגרי אמסיין, and then they will be tested if indeed they are sincere in their conversion. כי הרבה מן המסיעדים תחילו ישובו לסורם. Unfortunately, we know that many Gerim very quickly, not long after, they return back to their old ways, the Yischabru im Goig, and they'll become our enemies. Kemoshem, Motzinu, Ba'agod, like in the Agod. So therefore, we think of this very interesting day. Rashi here is giving us, is foretelling us a prophecy of what's going to be in the times of Mashiach. There are going to be a very large number of non-Jews, specifically from the nation of Edom, that are going to convert. They're going to become members of Klal Yisrael, and that's going to take place before Melchemes Goig u'Magog. And then life is going to get very difficult for Am Yisrael. And these Gerim who have joined us are going to also be subject to this Chevle Mashiach. And they may not, many of them will not, some of them will not be able to withstand the difficulties because they're newcomers. They've not been conditioned to the nation that the Yisurim that Klal Yisrael have suffered. This has become part of our identity, part of our natural psyche, to be able to be oimed in the nisyonos of what the world does to us, and not all of these gerim are going to be ready to handle it in the times of Yemos HaMashiach. And unfortunately, many of them are going to abandon ship. They're going to go back to their old ways. And worse than that, they're there going to be joining the opposition. They'll become rhinos. They're going to join the opposition. They're going to make believe that they're part of us. But when they realize, they see how much pressure, how much hatred there is for the Jewish people, they're not going to be able to be subject to that hatred. And they're going to abandon Klal Yisrael. And in fact, they'll join the opposition. That's what Rashi says. So are they going to be tested? Are you really sincere? Is your gerus really, truly sincere? And this is what is going to be one of the major events that will take place in times of Mashiach. Now, on a much smaller scale, gerus today in the modern world, we only talk about this, but very briefly, is a very big nisoyon for Rabbanim. And this has been a very big issue of Aaron Soloveitchik. He did not accept gerim. He was an anti-Gerus person. He really held that today the vast majority of Gerim, it's a fact, are being Megayer because they want to marry into the Jewish people. Not all. There are many situations where it's not like that, but many times when there's a person that's becoming a Ger, you ask them, why do you want to become a Ger? And you'll discover very quickly they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend that's Jewish. And their mother-in-law, the Shviga, says, you want to marry my daughter, you have to convert. That's a reality. That's a very large percentage of people who attempt to become Gerim. They come, it is revealed, that's why they want to become Gerim. Not all, it's definitely not all. There are many people who become Gerim 100% L'shem Shemayim, but there are unfortunately a significant number of people that do this. The question then is, are we allowed to accept people that we know as a fact? They're only attempting to convert because they want to marry someone who is Jewish. So this has been a big, big, big issue amongst different communities, amongst the Sfaradim. Mm-hmm. The Sfaradim are very non-tolerant of this. The Sfaradim are very, very non-tolerant, mm-hmm. very hard to convert. In what, the American Sfaradim? They're Rabbanim, they're very, very, they don't accept Gerim. Amongst the Ashkenazim, it's a mixed bag. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was took a very hard line, but the practice today amongst the vast, vast majority of Ashkenazim is we accept my cousin, he married. What?
In Chicago, sure.
Oh, you're talking about
Moshe.
That's correct. That is correct. But this is a very big issue. So what is the custom today? Today, the vast majority, don't ask, don't tell. A person wants to convert. It's none of our business. Why? It's none of our business. A person wants to get married. Adarava. So what's so terrible? His spouse, her spouse, will in fact be mechazik them. in being a good, solid ger or geiris. And therefore today, amongst the Ashkenazim, it is not discouraged at all. However, the problem is what happens.
You mean not discouraging for that reason?
For that reason, right? It's not discouraged for that reason at all. A person comes and says, I'm a goy, I want to marry this person, and then they'll only marry me if I convert. I'm telling you right off the bat, I really don't believe in any of this stuff, but I really like this person so much. Love conquers all. I'm willing to become an observant Jew. And I'll take the classes, I'll go to yeshiva for 2 years, and I'll learn and I'll study. So Bezdin today, okay, fine. If you commit, you're in. And what happens? So they become gerim, and they, you know, they take all the courses, and they mekabel upon themselves all of the mitzvahs, and they have basic knowledge. Okay, different bati dinim have different standards, but basically they know enough to get by, and they become gerim, and they get married, and then what happens? And then 2 years later, the wife, she doesn't cook him dinner. And the marriage falls apart. And after the marriage falls apart, what happens? This fellow who converted, he goes back to his old ways. So here now is the big dilemma. The big dilemma is, do we say that this person, it's a revelation that the gerus wasn't a gerus to begin with? And that means he's not Jewish. Or do we say he's Jewish? We have to know that. We have to really know if a person converts to Judaism and then later, a couple of years later, he goes back, as it says over here in Rashi, Chazar l'suram. They go back to their corruption. They go back to becoming non-observant. So how do we look at this person? Do we say that he is a Jew? No, so he's an irreligious Jew. Join the club. We only have probably at least 10 million of them out there. Join the club. So you're Jewish. Once you have converted, you are Jewish. So you're not observant. So what else is new? So you're not observant. Or do we say that, no, if you converted and now you go back to your old ways, that is a revelation that your conversion was insincere, and you're not Jewish. Don't tell me you have a bris milah, you went to mikvah, and you mekabel the mitzvahs. We now know that it was insincere because you went back to your old ways. This is a big, big problem because this scenario that I just described to you is very, very common.
Can I ask a question? There are a lot of marriages which is not done by Orthodox. It's not done by Orthodox.
No, if it's not Orthodox, it's nothing. If it's not an Orthodox conversion, it is zero.
They have people get married, and they get married not an Orthodox.
No, that doesn't count.
Because they don't Orthodox.
No. So then they're not Jewish. We're talking about an Orthodox conversion. People go through an Orthodox conversion, and they marry, and then unfortunately the marriage falls apart, and they become irreligious. And now the dilemma is this person Jewish? He comes to shul one day, he wants to get an aliyah. Okay, he comes to shul 10 years later. For whatever reason, he wants an aliyah, he wants this, he wants that. Is he a Jew? He had a conversion. He has the shtar from Bezdin. They converted him. But the reason why he converted was because he wanted to marry this woman. And then the second the marriage fell apart, the day after the marriage fell apart, he was no longer Shomer Shabbos. So what is the story? Big, big problem. This is a very big dilemma. I think more or less many rabbanim are very lenient. I remember years ago. I remember my father. There was a person. See, he was Jewish. It was a little bit different. So much easier. And he had basically a girlfriend. And the girlfriend was Shemesh Shabbat. She was a good girl. And she liked him, and he was completely irreligious, and he wanted to marry her, and she didn't want to. She felt very, held back because he really wasn't. He wasn't Shomer Shabbos. So my father somehow knew him. And my father got involved with him, and my father helped. My father, he actually raised money to buy him tefillin. Okay, to buy him tefillin. And my father asked me. I was like probably 13. I was probably like 15 years old. I should daven with him every day for a couple of days and help him with his tefillin, to show him how to put on tefillin, and to help him out a little bit for a couple of days to move him along in the right direction. And okay, so I did it, and it was very good. And then what happened? I found out about a year later that this guy is zero. He doesn't wear tefillin, the guy is totally nothing. Why? He broke off his relationship with his girlfriend. The only reason why he was going through the motions of committing himself to being observant, this wasn't a ger, this is the Baal Tshuva. The only reason why he committed himself to be observant was because he wanted to marry this girl. And as long as they remained in the relationship, so he was faithful. He put on tefillin, he came to shul, he did what he's supposed to do. And the moment that she said to him, goodbye, I'm not interested anymore, that was it. He quit. He totally quit. Cold turkey. So this was about tshuva. But unfortunately, you have the same exact scenario with geirim. People who go so far. To become a geir, there's very little you have to really do. You don't have to really know very much. Today, the bati dinim, they're pretty tough. They make a lot of demands. But according to halacha, as long as you're sincere and you say, I don't know very much about Judaism. Shabbos, you told me Shabbos, you don't go to work. Do I know all the intricate details about Hilcha Shabbos? No. I just know Shabbos, you don't go to work, you come to shul, don't turn on the lights, you don't drive. I don't know, all these details, how to make kiddush and how to wash, these things. Are you committed to eventually, over a period of time, you'll go and you'll pick up all the basic yisoides of yadus? Yes, I'm committed. Good enough. You go to the mikvah, a bris milah, a tovas dam bris, and you show that you're sincerely committed to be a good Orthodox Jew. Over time, you'll pick up all the details. That's good enough. That's technically good enough. And it's not very much. And there are bati dinim out there, unfortunately, that do that. I don't know, unfortunately, they allow that. They're very, very, very minimal standards. And then they unfortunately, very unfortunately, things don't work out for these people. They have a very weak background and they go back to their old ways. And now we have a big mess. Now we have a really big mess on our hands. Is he really Jewish? Because if he went back to his old ways so quickly, so swiftly, didn't take more than a couple of days to go back to his old ways, isn't that a revelation that his sincerity was not really there? It wasn't real sincerity? It's a big, big problem. And that's why many Bati Dinim, they have very high standards. They don't want on record to be responsible for such a situation where there is a dilemma. There is a question mark on the status of a person. It just makes problems going along down the line for generations. What is the status of this person? Who needs this sara? If you want to convert, prove it. So what happens? The Bezin, they get very, very tough. They make very, very high demands. And then the Bezin comes under attack. Why are you so nasty? Why are you so tough? If you wanted to convert, you wouldn't be able to pass your own test. I told you this thing. I have a friend who became a ger. I'm telling you the honest truth. If I wasn't Jewish, they wouldn't take me. What they demanded from him, the standards they demanded from him were so high. I couldn't survive. They wouldn't take me. So is that really right? Is that really the correct approach? Well, I'm not that Bezdin feels it is. And that's why today the Eretz Yisrael is such a big mess with the Rabbonot. It's in the government. The government became almost political. Who's in charge? And the standards of the state conversion process is always something which is in the news, continuously in the news. And it's also one of the big things, the new government. Okay, elections. The elections is very, very big, very big. This is the news again. That if now if certain parties come together, they will appoint as the minister of religion, a person who will completely change the rules of the game of what is considered to be, according to the state, a valid conversion, which many rabbanim will hold la halacha is invalid, and it will just create a much greater division in Israeli society between the religious and the irreligious. See, at least now, even though there's such incredible divide, the state is the recognition that the people that are in control of religion are Haredim, which have the support of the vast majority of the Haredi community. So at least what the state gives you, says that you're Jewish, the Rabbanim say that's right, we accept it. But if you're going to have in the state a minister that's not even Shomer Shabbos and is going to change the rules of the game, then when the state says that a person is Jewish or not Jewish, then in amongst the Haredi community, we don't accept that. So fine, gezunte hate. So it's a free world, do whatever you want. It ruins society. It creates, even though technically, who cares? Right. Even though technically, so who cares? So do whatever you want. It's like America. It's a free world. It's a free country. Right? So who cares? Let the state do whatever they want to go do. So the rabbanim, the yeshivas, they'll do whatever they want to go do. It doesn't work like that. It just creates more and more issues. It's a very, very big problem. And over here, if you want to say this, this really, to a degree, is what Rashi is predicting. I'm trying to read in our society into Rashi. Rashi here says that we're living now through a time of turmoil, and there's going to be a lot of gerus. Okay, there's going to be, Rashi says, I'm going to bring the gerim to fire. They're going to be tested. And there's going to be, many of the gerim are not going to be able to withstand the nisyonis of the generation. And they're going to want out. They're going to want to become, to lessen their resolve and their observance of Judaism, which according to many, many authorities, they're basically not Jewish anymore. They're behaving like non-Jews. And this is going to create a very big problem amongst ourselves of how we look at these people. Okay, that concludes Perek. Okay, now we have one more pasuk. Pasuk Buya Mal Hashem. Those that do survive, those that do remain in their sincerity, will say Buya Mal Hashem Kishi Yispalo Yispalo Hashem Lo Lo Kav Harishayim. Okay, the last pasuk just says that when they daven to Hashem, they will daven only to Hashem, and they're not going to pray to another god of their previous religion. Let's now just start a little bit for a few minutes to Radak. Radak, going back to Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin appears on page 843. Cherev Uri Al Roi. To the third pass. Perish Rashi Zal. Al Esav Shefgadati Al Soim Golusi. That Rashi understood that the subject of the Pasuk is Esav, to whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu has appointed to be the shepherd of the host. Okay, Esav is our host. In Golos, for these last 1,952 years, we are subject to our host countries. And the vast majority of our host countries identify as Western civilization, as Esav. Esav HaRasha. They are serving as our host in Golos. V'algever amisi shechibartiv elai lishmar esayni komoini. I have appointed Esav to be the guardian of the Jewish people, to be their host for the duration of Golos. Hach Esadaya. Malchus Melech Remi Horusha. The time of Mashiach has arrived. And I command my sword. You see the end over here. Melech Remi Horusha. And now the time of Mashiach has arrived. And now it's time for the host to depart from the world stage. And I command my sword to smite the king of Rome, period. This is what Rashi over here is saying over here, obviously is explosive. You go show this over here to the Congress, they'll say there's an insurrection going on amongst the Orthodox community. How dare you say that? We paid for the Iron Dome. Look how good we are to you. we let you fight for 11 days before we demanded a ceasefire. And you go and you say that God's going to say that take out the sheath and assassinate the leader of the free world. You know, this Rashi indeed is a very scary Rashi. Okay, if the goyim see what we just read in Rashi, they're not going to like what it says in Rashi. Okay, because that's what it says. That's what Rashi says. Da Hashem, and now the host is Esav, Western civilization. The leader of the Western civilization is the President of the United States. And this pasuk over here, Hashem is addressing the sword.
It's a war on Klal Yisrael.
Okay, so it's how could you say that? We've been so good to you. Freedom of religion, we've given you so much. And that's the truth. The Medina Shel Chesed. So it is indeed a very shocking Rashi. Ad kedei kach, that we live in a country where they even let us print this. They let us go and bring back the original version, the originally uncensored version.
Maybe that's just like the Gemara, where it says, no, they only built all that...
For their own good.
Only for their
Rashbi, own. Rashbi. Okay,
maybe.
You wouldn't want to show this. If you're invited to give to the White House, well, I don't think you're going to take out the article edition, the article, the unabridged article edition of Sefer Zechariah, and open it up and read this to the President of the United States in front of the entire world, and read this Rashi that Hashem says to Hach, I want you to go and to take out the leader of the free world, of Western civilization. I don't think it's going to go very well.
Yeah, well, they don't like seeing themselves as the bad guy Edom either.
They don't.
They kind of mess with that.
Okay, so this is obviously a very complicated issue. Period. V'hachacham, Rabbi Avraham ibn Ezra Perash, Shadavua Zos al Muhammad's Rabbis Tiyena B'chol Aritz B'mei Mashiach Ben Yosef. We're now referring specifically, he's coming to broaden the scope of what this pasuk means, as indeed this is what the Mitzudas David has done. The Mitzudas David also has not specified that we are describing any specific leader. Okay, we are describing there's going to be Melchama of Goyg u'Magog, which is going to be a coalition. Many nations, wicked people, many wicked people out there. And it's not referring specifically to any one nation. It's referring to the enemy, whoever the enemy may be. V'tam ro'i, now the Radak Kedarkoi, who is the world-renowned expert on grammar, obviously has what to say about this very bizarre word that we have struggled, broken our teeth to translate. Ro'i. Akol Melech Mehagoyim Shem Shiloi Hashem Al Aretz is really what the Mitzudas David has said, has been taken, lifted, plagiarized straight from the Radak. Okay, and over here he's saying the word Roi means my shepherd. It is a term which refers to, it's like the collective noun, any single king of any head of state that Hashem has appointed to lead their nation. Is who we are calling here, and is part of the translation of the word ro'i. Al melech, a king, any king, me hagoyim, shem shiloi Hashem al aretz.
Ibn Ezra also says it. Ibn Ezra.
Say, there he's quoting Ibn Ezra. He's quoting Ibn Ezra, isn't he? Okay, he's quoting Ibn Ephraim. Hashem shiloi Hashem al aretz, v'hu choshev atzmai shuhu ke'elokim. But he is a little bit more flavor. This head of state has the honor and his power has gotten to his head.
Yeah.
He needs to go and buy a new hat because his old hat doesn't fit him anymore because his head has been inflated, has swollen with his ego. He thinks he's God. Al Kain Omar, Al Gever Amisi, Shohu Choy Shevalatzmo, Shohu Gever Amisi. He thinks he's equal to me. He thinks the kichesh ba'amiso. See, the Radak here gives us much more flavor than Rashi and the Mitzudas. The Radak here says that these words gather is being said from the perspective of the head of state, the melech. Until now, when we learned the Mitzudas and Rashi, and we focused on the word gather amisi, we translated these words from the perspective of Hashem. Hashem says, I have appointed people to be leaders of the world. I, Hashem, am calling them Roi. I, Hashem, am giving them honor. I'm calling them, I'm going to be mechabed them. I'm going to, by calling them Gever Amisi. You're one of mine. We let's talk shop. I'm a leader. and you're a leader. Now you're a nothing compared to Hashem. You're not even a nothing. You're a nothing of a nothing of a nothing. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving mechabed you. Hashem is very generous. Hashem gives kavod. So that's how we learned until now. But the Radak cannot tolerate such a pshat. How can you not cannot acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give these lowlives so much honor by calling them Hashem, calling them, oh, we do the same thing, we have the same parnasa. No way. Instead, he says that it's being said from the perspective of these kings. These kings, they're so low, they're so arrogant. They think they rule the world, that they think that they're an equal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is their friend. Hashem doesn't think like this. The arrogance of these people, it led them to make this statement. We're switching the focus and the perspective. So Hashem says, Haches Aroyeh. So you know what the end's going to be? Hashem will wipe them out. Hashem Yisparach Yachris Kol Melech Nehagoyim Usifu Tzena Tzoynoi. Hashem will wipe them out, and their sheep will be dispersed. V'atzoyarim, who are they? Heim Hashul Toynim V'hasarim. These are their underlings. Their second layer of power. Sheheim Tzirim Mehamalachim. The young, the next generation. The leaders in training. V'tirgim Yoinesan, we learned this before. Harba Isgili, my sword will be revealed. Al Malka, upon the king. The Al Shultoina, Chavre, and upon their officers, the Chavosei, that share power together with them, the Domilei, Omar Hashem Tzivokos, Kitol Yasmalka. Hashem gives instructions to the sword. Smite, attack, launch an attack. The Yisbadrun Shultonaya, and let these leaders, their secondary leaders, let them be confused, let them be in a state of chaos and be dispersed. Va'asev Yas Mochas Givurte, and then I will return. The word Va'asev means a second round, and then we will launch a second attack. The Yas Mochas Givurte, the remainder, Mochas Givurte, I'm not sure how to translate these words exactly. Galtin Yo Naya, on the second day, on the secondary, the next level. After we take out the leaders, we'll come back to mop up all of the followers. Roitze loymar, ha-mishnim shel ha-malachim v'ha-shultoynim, the secondary officers. One will put another positive. Ha-yu b'chol ha-aretz, perish b'chol ha-aretz yishol, yesh mefarshim, b'chol ha-oilam gam, ki gam me'umos ha-oilam lo yisharu ela ha-toivim, shiyu oivdei ha-kel yisparach. The Radak over here coming to have a dilemma. What does this mean when it says there's only going to be left a third? Does this mean the entire world, or does this mean only in Eretz Yisrael? That's a very big difference. Melchemes Goy Gumagli, when we are going to describe that two-thirds of the people living in Eretz Yisrael, the enemies are going to be, those two-thirds of the enemies of the Jewish people are going to be eliminated, does that mean two-thirds of the enemies that are surrounding Eretz Yisrael, or does it mean two-thirds of the world population? Very big nafkamina in how many people are going to be involved in this. Pishnayim, shnei chalokim mehem, yikorsu yigvo, miktsasam yikorsu b'chef, some of them will die by sword, miktsasam yigvo b'dever. Wow, isn't that scary? It sounds like biological war. Some of them, who knows, but it says over here, there are two terms describing Milchemes Gog u'Magog. It says the word yikorsu and yigvo. Yigvo is what means death. Vayigva vayomos. And over here he says the word dever. It sounds like over here the Radak is saying that Milchemes Goyg u'Magog is going to be number part will be through the classic weapons of mass destruction,
conventional weapons,
and part will be through a dever. A dever? What dever? Biological weapons. We now know what this means. You see, the prophecy, Zechariah, the prophets, they saw, whoever would imagine that a human being has the ability to create a dever, to create a biological weapon. Unfortunately, we know it's all about what this is all about. It's not a joke. V'yashlishes yivaser ba yisharu be'eretz achayim. A third will remain. Pasuk tes ve'esi bo'esh per'perush b'tzores koshes doyme lo'esh. V'yamar bo'esh l'fi shimshim l'mitzor v'akesef ha'azov. It's compared to refining gold and silver. Shem tzarfim u'boichanim bo'esh. Next page 845. Kein yiyuhem mitzorafim u'vichunim b'savlam hatzores hakosh b'leiv toy bo'es hazman. The Jewish people will be able to overcome all of the difficulties. Sheyisbelu v'oisam l'chein terim genesan ve'ael yas tilisa be'oka b'chur de'esha in fire. Those words mean different types of fire, and the Jewish people will be able to overcome the nisyonos and they will survive. Okay, so we've gone through three rounds. Im yiratz Hashem on Monday, we'll do the Malbo. We'll take a short break and then we'll learn some parashah.